You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the coaching perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. Today's Thursday, so we're talking about coaching. I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice here at Critical Mass. I'm a master certified coach, past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation, and my coaching training was done through CTI, the Coaches Training Institute. All of which to say that plus 10 plus years of experience coaching lets me host a radio show. So here we go. Before we start, though, let me just remind you, lost my place there, sorry. Before we start, let me remind you that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows, which air every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m. They're all brought to you live right here on octalkradio.net. Our call-in numbers, this is live talk radio, so let me give you those numbers. If you want to weigh in with an opinion, if you want to disagree, or you just want to make a comment, hey, we'd love to hear from you. So those numbers are 949-713-6443 and 949-713-6447. Well, you know, just before the start of the show, and I'll take the risk of starting this out at the expense of all my guests, but probably for the enjoyment of my listeners, the producer and I were chatting away, and he said, you know, why is it, he said, that every HR professional that we've had on the show who spends their life interviewing people is always nervous about being interviewed on the radio. So, Kathy, I hope you're not that way, but today we've got a great guest, Kathy Guiney, whose firm is Yes HR Solutions. Kathy is someone that I truly respect as an HR professional. I have the opportunity not only to know her, but I've had the opportunity to work with her, and I'm pleased to have you with us. Welcome, Kathy.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, it's going to be a great show. You have lots of information that we're dying to hear about, so... You'll forgive me for my little joke about nervous HR speakers being interviewed.
Well, it's all true. I'm very nervous.
Okay, so let's start with some real soft, easy questions. Tell the audience, Kathy, a little bit about what did you do before your current firm?
Well, I have 20 years or so in HR in public and private companies, multiple industries. Kind of came up through the ranks, technical recruiter into HR management and finally into HR leadership in domestic international companies. So I really had a very broad and interesting career before I launched my consulting practice. And I've been very grateful for all of those opportunities I had along the way.
And, you know, let me just mention, and I'd like you to elaborate a little bit on it, but I want to tell the audience that, you know, one of the ways in which we kind of acknowledge our professionals in HR is through the HR Certification Institute. And Kathy holds both the SPHR, which is the Senior Professional in HR rating, and she also holds the GPHR, which is the Global Professional in Human Resource rating. Tell us a little bit about that training, Kathy, and what it does for you.
Well, it's really kind of a formal discipline focus for the HR profession, and it's a particular set of curriculum for both the SPHR and GPHR. It's very formal. You have to study for it. You have to pass it. And I think it's very special because it is something you have to work for, and it has to be renewed every 3 years. So it forces you to stay on top of your game and to continue to learn the new skills that are out there, to learn the new laws, to learn the new nuances to the craft. So I'm very glad I pursued it. Of course, if you'd asked me while I was studying for it, I would have not been so happy. But now that I have the certificates, I'm really glad that I do.
Well, that's wonderful. And in fact, you know, we've had a number of people who hold the SPHR, but I think you're only the second person that holds the global rating, which I understand requires some experience requirements in working outside the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, I had some experience working in the UK and Australia and also in some of the Middle Eastern countries hiring salespeople. So it was just, I felt appropriate to also pursue a little bit more of the HR disciplines and how they're implemented in other countries. And I think it's been a big benefit to being able to look at HR globally. I mean, because it's not just HR in the U.S. It's a very small world these days. So I'm glad that I pursued it.
Well, great. Okay, so tell us a little bit about YES, your firm, YES, HR Solutions, and, you know, when did you start it? What's your niche, and who's your kind of ideal client?
Well, I founded YES, Your Human Resources Solution, or YES, HR Solution, 7 years ago. And I look back now, Doug, and one of these things where sometimes if you think about things too much, you never move forward. And I had a quest of running my own business, and HR is what I knew, so that's what I decided to do. Focusing on small to mid-sized companies, emerging growth, entrepreneurial groups up to several hundred employees. And after my first year in consulting, I realized I really needed to complement my skills, which are generalist in nature, with some very specific disciplines. And I partnered with Sarah Snoy, who is very gifted in compensation and training. And at that point, which was now about 6 years ago, we really started to make some impact in our target clients, which again is that small to mid-size range, and because we're now able to offer a full range of HR services. So that's kind of how we got to where we are. And I must say I love the entrepreneurial spirit of those size companies, and it's kind of where I was meant to be, I think.
Wonderful. Well, you know, and that is a great thing that you have Sarah there. I've worked with Sarah also, and the two of you do an excellent job of complementing each other's skills. You have a lot of overlap, but you also have some expertise in sort of separate areas. So that's a wonderful ability that you bring to the table. You know, Kathy, most of the people that we've had on the show have been HR directors, managers, or VPs working for a company. And your role is a little different in that you are an outside consulting firm bringing HR solutions. So can you kind of tell us what the sort of typical role is that you play? How does that work? When would a company go to you? And what's your typical engagement and participation with the management there?
Well, it falls into a couple of different categories. Certainly, there's a client base that we serve as an outsourced resource to them. In fact, one of our clients is actually a HR outsourcing company, and we outsource with them. So this is about companies sometimes realizing they need an extra set of hands and an extra set of eyes on something. So we, you know, add some outside expertise on that. Another venue is the clients that are looking to build an HR structure. Maybe they've gotten to a size where they just know that they need some help beyond what they can do themselves. And we'll come in and give them some guidance, perhaps create some foundation for them that's scalable, that can grow with them. Sometimes it's very project related. Sometimes someone will reach out and say, you know what, we heard that you put together a great compensation program for somebody else, and we'd like to talk to you about that. So it kind of crosses all three of those different situations, which is great for us because it provides that variety that I was looking for when I founded the consulting company, because it was that variety that was kind of driving me forward, and thankfully we've been able to do that.
Kathy, are you quite often a sort of interim solution, or and if so, what is interim really mean, or are you for many companies the permanent solution to their HR skills?
Well, you know, certainly interim has been one of our cards that we have offered to our clients, and For example, I was the interim HR leader at an aerospace company, in the local area, because they were in transition, and it was one of those situations where they really needed some HR leadership, but it was not going to be appropriate to hire someone full-time because it was going to end. It was going to end. It was meant to end. So in cases like that where it's a transitional thing, another client was in a transition of really writing their company and having it become more profitable again. Not quite sure what they needed full-time. We went in there on an interim basis. And it looks to the employees, like we're their full-time resource. So it's one of these things where we know it's interim. The CEO probably knows it's interim, but it's our job to make it that transparent to the employees. They need to come to us just like they would if we were on payroll. So that's kind of an interesting thing to pull off. I think we've done it very well a couple times. But it's kind of a little bit of both worlds. It's like, you're a consultant, but you want people to think you're kind of not.
So do you think that gives you an edge in the employee's willingness to talk to you, or do you think it really becomes an invisible thing? It's totally transparent.
I think if you do it right, it's invisible. Mm-hmm. I think having employees talk to their HR resource is more about the HR resource than whether you're full-time, consultant, part-time, whatever your status is. I think it's about how you approach your job. Are you approachable? And are you a person that just is going to say no to all the questions? Because, just kind of stepping back a bit, one of the reasons I wanted to name the company, my company, Yes, is because that's what I wanted to project for HR. That's really what I believe. It should be about finding solutions and saying, yes, we can find a solution to that, as opposed to saying, no, you can't do that. Which, how many times have we heard that before? So I really wanted to kind of turn it on its head and say HR can be about saying yes. It can be about, an affirmation. It can be about finding ways to get things done, whether you got a big budget, no budget, some budget, and finding creative ways to bring the HR discipline to companies and to show it to employees in a different light.
Okay. And, one of the questions that we always ask our HR guests is really, what's your relationship with the management team? Are you part of the management team or are you not part of the management team? And how do you find that works for you as an outside consultant? And how do you think it should work?
That's a really interesting question, Doug, because that is a balancing act, because you're not an employee. So technically, you're not part of the management team, but if you do your job right, as I said, they forget that, and they still involve you in the decisions. They still ask your advice. So again, I would come back to the fact it's about how you present your craft. I think there are moments when, perhaps because of confidentiality or because of some other things, you don't get to participate, and, sometimes that's a little hard to swallow, but I think that if you're doing your consulting or your HR practice right, the management team accepts you as the resource and the expert that you are. So you are involved in a lot of different types of decisions.
Okay. I would imagine that one of the advantages that you experience coming into a firm from the outside is that internal HR people get stuck with so many miscellaneous non-HR jobs that the company just doesn't know who to give to. And I would guess that you don't get those because of your outside status, which allows you to focus on what your real role is. Would that be accurate?
I think so. Certainly in the smaller companies, the HR function does tend to be a catch-all function. It just like in the smaller the company gets, it's not exclusively the case, but it tends to be usual for employees to have jobs that cover several different areas. You make the most of the resources you have in a smaller company, and that's going to be the same for the person covering HR. They might be the HR manager and the office manager at the same time. depending upon the size of the company. So there's only so much that one or two people can focus on. And it tends to be the day-to-day maintenance kinds of things. It tends to be compliance, very, very important, but it tends to be compliance. It tends to be the benefit administration. And that leaves a hole that I'm sure these people would love to dive into, but it does leave a need for folks like me and Sarah to come in and act as their outsourced resource again, to sort of help them say, you know, let us add some program management to this. Let us add some performance management. Let us help you with this compensation thing. We know you don't have time to do the research. So it's really not about doing it for people. We like to really come in and participate with people as they have the bandwidth and time to do so, because I know from my perspective, I feel that I've been a success at a project when I leave behind some learning too. So whoever I've worked with, they now know more about that particular HR project or HR discipline than they did before I got there. That's a success as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, I want to come back to that in a minute, but let me ask you one more question before we go to our commercial break. You know, we talked the other day when we met about the new book that we just put out, CEO Guiding Principles, which is really based on the interviews that we've been doing on our radio shows. And I want to give you a chance to answer that question also and maybe be in the next issue of that. So tell me about an experience or a key lesson that really sort of cemented what is the guiding principle that you use in your business relationships.
I think it is customer focus, customer service. And I think that I learned that when I was in corporate America, and how much I appreciated people doing things when they said they were going to do them, how I appreciated people calling me back timely. And I've taken those lessons and really applied that to our practice. And it's about listening to our customer. It's about doing what we say we're going to do. It's about follow-up, and it's about making sure that they get the product they want versus us giving them a product that we think is cool and groovy.
Very good. Very good. Well, look, if you can hold on 1 second, we need to take a break for a commercial, and then we'll be right back with you,
sure.
Kathy.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Okay, we're back with Kathy Guiney of Yes HR Solutions. Kathy, I want to ask you a question about coaching, but let me just sort of frame it in terms of sharing with the audience that we here at Critical Mass for Business, we've been coaching executives and business owners for 17 years, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective, which is part of the Critical Mass for Business Service Group. And our role is really to help create more effective management teams, effective in terms of effectiveness of the individual and effectiveness of the team itself. In all cases, our goal is really to increase the productivity of both of those partners, the team and the individual. And we do this through both individual coaching of top executives to the newest entry-level position and group coaching, and sometimes coaching for executives who just want to sharpen their business skills. So tell me, what has been your experience in terms of HR's involvement with coaching, and what is your definition of coaching? What is coaching as you see it really being used in the business world today?
Interesting question. I think that over the last couple of years, I think the term training and coaching have become misused, maybe, or people use both words to mean the same thing, and I think they are different. I think that HR primarily in many companies focuses on training, and that is imparting perhaps a specific skill. It might be sort of, you know, management training 101, and I'm referring to this because this is something that Sarah and I do. It's about giving supervisors the basics of how to manage employees. That, to me, is training. And it can be very powerful, but that falls into training bucket. The coaching part of it, I think, is really, you know, and you and I have talked about this, I think it's really more falls into a business development sort of bucket, because it's giving the group, the executive, some further insights on how to be, as you said, more productive in communication, how to be more effective in communication, all of which is going to help drive the company forward and hopefully be more profitable and grow market share and all that sort of thing. So I think that probably they all, coaching and training, started out, you know, in the same acorn, but grew into a tree with different branches. And I think that the coaching part is very specific to, as I've used it in companies, the communication, how to deal with different personalities and be effective. Whereas the training piece, a little bit more day-to-day skill development, as I said, you know, how to manage employees, how to give performance feedback, those kinds of things.
You know, that's you know, you had mentioned this to me earlier when we met in the week before the show we came on the show, and I never had really put together the term business development with coaching, and your point that coaching someone to be more productive, to be more effective, no matter what their role is in the company, in effect, ultimately results in more business for the company because of that increased productivity. So it's a business development skill.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I had never really made that connection before, and I think it's a very, very interesting observation. I would maybe add one thing to your definition that is sort of my own way of looking at it, is that while coaching really is many times centered around communication skills, it isn't just communication with other people, whether it's your employees or your peers or whoever you report to. Many times the coaching revolves or evolves around communication or improved communication with yourself. You know, we all have these obstacles that we've created, these self-limiting factors in our own mind. Sometimes it's the little voice that tells us we can't do it, or it isn't going to work, or it's not my job. And sometimes it's more deeply seated into, I just can't do that. And coaching works on that communication. So it's not just with people outside yourself. Many times the biggest challenge in coaching is working on that communication that we all have with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Again, not to take anything away, but just to expand from kind of what you talked about. What has been, Kathy, your observation in terms of the effectiveness, if you've run into this, between internal and external coaches?
Hmm. You know what? That's kind of interesting, because I've really had some mixed experiences, because I think that coaching is a discipline learned. It's a whole lot more than just sitting down and chatting with somebody. And I think that just like if you have a very gifted scientist in your company, I mean, it's a very learned skill. It's not something not everyone can do, and you should have taken classes and be certified and all the things that you should be doing. So I think the likelihood generally of having that skill inside, unless you hired specifically for that, is probably not likely. In my corporate experience, and I've been an HR leader for years, I never hired somebody with a coaching background. Maybe I never had the opportunity to do so, but I never did so. I would go outside for that because I was looking for somebody who had that very specific training, very specific skills. And also you have the, it's not someone that the the management team or the CEO is going to have to interact with every day. So I think that there is a freedom to speak to somebody that you know you're not going to meet in the lunchroom, you know, at noon. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think that that's a benefit, too. It's kind of this third party coming in, and we're going to have a certain conversation. Then they go away, and they come back the next day. I'm not going to be walking to my car with them or seeing them, like I said, in the lunchroom. So it adds some freedom of expression, I think.
Great observation. You know, I want to go back to something you started to talk about, which I think is such an important issue and had really not given it that much thought till you brought it up in a conversation you and I had earlier. And that is this emphasis, and I want to almost call it an obsession, that companies have with thinking of HR as compliance-oriented departments. And I find this especially true in the smaller or mid-sized companies where the management perception is what HR department does is it keeps me from getting sued.
Yeah, I think that's been a focus. I've noticed it more, you know, over the last couple of years when, you know, funds were tight and the markets were slow. And in combined with that, we've had a lot of new laws and regulations, a lot of focus on wage and hour, a lot of focus on, you know, I-9s, a lot of focus on legally compliant things that companies have to do. And it is, you know, it is the world we live in, and but it's time-consuming. And it is about, you're right, smaller companies are just saying, just keep me out of trouble. Just do whatever we need to do, keep me out of trouble. And it's a shame. I think it's a shame. I don't have great solutions for it, but there's a lot being lost. I think that I fear that HR is taking a step back because it's a lot more than just compliance. Compliance is dreadfully important, very important, but it's more than that. It's more than, let's check the payroll roster to be sure we're paying overtime correctly, very important. But what about employee engagement? What about the career development? What about all of the things that you want for employees to be engaged, passionate, and productive? That's a whole lot more than just compliance. But I think it's getting lost. Maybe cost-cutting. I don't know. You still find it at the larger companies because they still tend to have a little bit more internal resources to focus on program development. But the smaller companies, you know, laser-focused on, I can't afford anything to go wrong with compliance, so keep me out of trouble, keep me out of trouble. And I just fear that is a step back for HR, and I'm sure those HR people are very frustrated. Now, obviously, so selfishly, it gives me and Sarah an opportunity to come in and maybe help, but in the big picture of things, I worry about that. I worry about just having a compliance-focused HR department.
You know, and since you mentioned it to me, I kind of mulled this over and wondered whether, because of the complexity that has evolved around compliance, because it's become so difficult, so time-consuming to stay up to date on it, I'm wondering if this isn't going to become sort of the permanent HR role and the rest of those things, employee development, employee training, all of the engagement, all of the other things you mentioned, are going to be relegated to outside resources that are brought in, maybe by the HR departments. Do you think that's what we're going to?
Well, I think that's definitely a possibility. You know, I stand ready to help. But, you know, I just think that, again, I think that's a very big possibility. And I'm sure it's one that's going to, that if that's where the direction it goes, is going to work beautifully well. But it's, you know, it's kind of a bigger issue than that. It really is about what HR can be to a company, and how important it's sort of balancing all of it. It's really about balance. That's what it's about. It's about balancing the compliance piece with the employee engagement, with the productivity, with the feedback, with all of those things. So it's, you know, I like to think of HR as certainly a lot of very disciplines, very distinct disciplines, but at the end of the day, it's an art. You're talking about people. You're talking about how to interact with different kinds of people, different personalities. So it can't just be always be this technical piece, just like compliance is pretty technical. There has to be an art and a craft to it. And we would be a shame if small companies lost that. It just would be a shame.
You know, one of the things, since this has really been sort of brought to our attention and kind of an assumption that we're making, is that many of the HR people that we have talked to, not all of them certainly, but many, really aren't comfortable with selling, and I mean that in the true sense, selling this expanded role to their CEO, to their CFO, to wherever they report, that they just don't know how to present the programs or the potential programs in a way that the company is going to see the ROI on it and, in fact, take action on it. And as we've been working to put together a peer group just for HR professionals, we've sort of identified that this ability to sell internally your HR services is really a key factor that we don't feel has really been stressed enough in many HR training classes.
Well, I think that's the art. That's the art and craft of it, Doug. That's the influence part. That's a very big skill in HR, is the ability to influence and ability to communicate alternative approaches and alternative ideas to getting to someplace, and then being able to add being able to articulate, here is the value. And this value is going to get you as much as, in a revenue stream, right? It's going to create revenue down the road by having people stay with you. Your key people will stay with you, which everybody wants, right? They'll be more productive. They will attract other key people to come work there. So it's about thinking through what the return on investment is, as opposed to just thinking, well, okay, if I do this, I need to bring in $5. It's a different kind of equation. There is a return on investment, but it's a different kind of equation. And that's the art. That's the art part of HR. That's the coolest part of it.
Kathy, we're going a little long here, but if you can stay, we have to take a break, but I want to come back. I have two more questions I'd really like to get your input on. So
Okay. Just
excuse us for 1 minute, another commercial.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Okay, and we're back live again with Kathy Guiney of Yes HR Solutions. Kathy, you and I had a little conversation about this sort of phenomena that is going on in recruiting right now, where we have a public perception that everybody's out of a job, and yet every HR person I talk to tells me they're having trouble filling positions with qualified people. Can you comment on that?
Well, I think there's two things that are going on there. I think that some of the qualified candidates who are currently employed are reluctant to move jobs until I think that they can see a handful more months or a year or so of stability in the market and growth in the market. So I think there's a reluctance of people to try out a new company. And I think that critical skills and very talented people are no more or less hard to find than they ever were. I think it's just a misperception that because we've, as a country have struggled with unemployment for the last couple years, that, oh my gosh, there must be thousands of great people out there. Well, there's the same amount of great people there were before we went into a recession. It's the same amount of people. So I think it's a perception, that, all the people that are out of work, in which we don't wish on anyone, but people out of work, therefore equals lots of great people. It's the same number of great people that there were before. Mm-hmm. And everyone's still competing for that same number of great people.
And I think you hit on a key point, especially because so much of this economic resurgence is really being driven by the small and mid-sized businesses. that I think you got a key point there, that many people are afraid to go to work for a new, small, or mid-sized mm-hmm. company mm-hmm. because they're concerned about, is it stable? Am I
right.
just jumping
it's,
from...
You know, that's right. How much risk am I willing to take? You know, people have stories. They say, you know, my neighbor's been out of work for 9 months. I can't do that. I have a family to support. Therefore, I'll stay where I am till I'm sure it's a little bit more stable. That thought process is out there, and who can blame people, really? I do think the tide is turning, and we're seeing all kinds of statistics about that, about how many people are dissatisfied with their jobs and how many people are getting ready to try something new as soon as they're a little bit more confident. So, you know, now is the time to kind of shore up your talent and, you know, kind of wrapping this back around and to get your employees engaged. Because there will be a time when people will say, it's now time for me to find something new. It's safe enough now.
So what should, if I can put you on the spot, because I believe you're really right. I think we're on the edge of a terrible backlash that mm-hmm. employees that have had salaries, benefits, hours, everything you can imagine reduced, plus they've been given extra work to do to cover for the people that were let go, that while they understand it intellectually, that emotionally at some point they're going to say, I'm going to another company. This one hasn't treated me that well. And the day they feel that the job market is safe and they can do that is the day that we're going to see a big exodus that we had no early warning on. So what should companies be doing to protect themselves against that right now?
Well, I think this is about appreciation. This is about looking for ways to, if you take the money aside, and let's just say a company cannot afford right now to give big raises. They just can't do it. What else can you do? You know, there's lots of ways to engage employees without necessarily giving them money. What about career development? Okay, small company's going to say, but gee, Kath, I don't have the money for that either. Well, you know, we need to stop thinking that everything needs to cost something. What about, as an example, what about going to your resident experts, you know, that great computer guy that you have in your company and saying, hey, well, would you like to teach a class for all your coworkers on how to use LinkedIn? All of a sudden, he's going, sure, you mean I can do some training? You're going, yeah, of course you can. And now all of a sudden, he's kind of, you know, the dude to the rest of the employees, and everyone's kind of excited about it. He gets some credibility. He gets some pats on the back. So there are ways to do things that don't need to cost money. You just need to say, just as we do in our personal lives, okay, I can't buy this thing over here. What can I do instead? You can make it yourself. You know, you can, you know, fix what you have. So I think that there are many, many things companies can do that do not need to cost a lot of money that will indicate to the employees you appreciate their hard work, give them some extra career motivation. I just think perhaps we're so busy that we're not looking at those things. And unfortunately, to your point, Doug, we're going to be too busy up until the end of the cliff, and all of a sudden employees are leaving. And we're going to go, oh, I wish I hadn't been so busy. I should have done something about this.
Yeah, I think the great observation, and I think you're right, because in the past we always had some early warning that employees weren't happy. They asked for more money. They asked for more courses. They asked for more work flexibility, something that gave us an indication they weren't happy. But in today's environment, they don't ask for anything because they don't want to rock the boat.
This is going to be just someone showing up in your office and saying, I'm leaving in 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the last question I wanted to ask you here, you just sort of briefly touched on it, technology. You know, there's all sorts of scary articles in the newspaper and in the magazines these days about the social networking sites. So from an HR perspective, what's the impact that... when I apply for a job with you, that you now look me up on Facebook and see the pictures of my absolutely phenomenal New Year's party.
You mean the one I wasn't invited to, that New Year's party, Doug? Yeah, okay.
Well, actually, in my case, it's pretty slim you'd find that. But what is going to be the impact for employees, especially the younger generation that's so active in the social networking sites and sharing their personal life?
Well, I don't think we've seen the impact yet, because clearly the legal piece, the, employment legal piece of the social media is falling behind, or is running behind, is a better way to put it, how we actually use it. So we don't quite know yet, I don't think, what the legal ramifications of the employment part of social media is. The practical part of it is we all use it to some manner or another. I'm sure that some of the listeners have probably Googled both you and me to see what we look like and who we are and what have we done. It's just natural curiosity, and now we have that available to us. So, you know, I'm kind of reluctant to predict how it's all going to go, other than intuitively I say there's got to be a way to embrace it to at a level that is not going to be harmful or discriminating against people. But it's a fabulous tool. It's a fabulous tool. It's a great recruiting tool. To your point, for, you know, the college-age kids, it's wonderful. You know, you go on campus and then, you know, and you go on campus in March and you keep in touch with the students you want by Twittering them. It's fabulous. But I don't think that we've yet seen how the legal landscape is going to embrace this. We hear horror stories, to your point, but not a lot of definition other than so far, oh, don't do that. Don't have a business Facebook page. And if you do, you got to get releases. And all that might be true. But I think that in the end, we'll find a way to embrace it, just like we embraced email and just like we embraced BlackBerries and everything else. We will find a way to embrace it. I just don't think we quite know what that's going to be yet.
Wonderful. Great explanation on that, Kathy. And let me just say, again, I want to apologize for keeping you longer. I know I told you this interview wasn't going to go that long, but I really, you have so many great insights. I really wanted to have a chance for you to share those with our audience. And to see that continues, can you share with us, you're very involved in social media. What are some of the ways that our audience can stay in touch or follow you or learn more about you and your company?
Well, thanks. I'm on Facebook. I've got a business Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/YesHR Solution. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/KathyYesHR. I have a website, www.YesHRSolution.com. So all kinds of ways to find me out there. I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm trying to embrace the social media wherever I can.
You're doing a great job, and if anybody didn't get all of those links, you can just Google her and you'll find it, find them all. Kathy, is there anything else that we touched on today that you didn't get to give your full piece on that you wanted to say before we kind of sign off on this?
No, I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I'd love to be asked back. It's been great fun.
Well, you will. Kathy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks,
Have
Doug.
A nice evening.
Bye.
Well, that was a great interview. We've been listening to Kathy Guiney of Yes HR Solutions. A little different guest today in the sense that she is not a full-time employee for a company in an HR role, but is a outside contract resource or solution to your HR problems, focusing on either project issues or maybe part-time HR department solutions for companies that really can't afford or aren't ready yet to embrace a full-time HR department. So let's, my favorite question, what's our takeaway from today's conversation? What did you get from that? Well, one of the takeaways that I noted was this obsession with compliance that Kathy points out, the concern that maybe it's the economic times, but HR departments in small and mid-sized companies have become totally absorbed by keeping the company out of trouble and making sure that they're in compliance with all of the many rules and regulations. And she expresses concern that where's this leading to? Who is then working on the training and the development and the employee engagement and all of those other soft skills that HR has taken on and that are so critical to the retention of our key employees. So that was one observation that she made that I think was very critical. She talked also about the issue of training and turnover today? This disconnect that we have between the number of people out of work and the difficulty in finding qualified people to fill positions. So, again, that's something that many of our guests have touched on. Nobody seems to have a solution to that issue or a real explanation for the phenomena that's really going on there. But definitely an issue to deal with. So, great guest. If you just tuned in late, be sure to check our website, criticalmassforbusiness.com or octalkradio.net. And you can, first of the week, you'll be able to go on and download today's show and listen to it at your leisure, or you can look on iTunes. All of those would work, and we appreciate your support. We have been having phenomenal activity on our downloads, and we're just really, really very pleased with that. You know, our radio show is really an extension of our 17-year business practice where we build executive peer groups for executives here in Orange County, all under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums. And Rick, my business partner, and I are currently leading multiple CEO peer groups and key executive groups. And if you'd like to learn more about those or about our coaching practice, check out our website, criticalmassforbusiness.com. If you'd like to learn more about how peer groups work, you might want to read Rick's book on it, The Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. It's been called The Definitive Guide to the CEO Peer Group Experience, and it's for sale on Amazon.com along with our other books. You can find it by typing in under author Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. Or if you want to read our newest book, which was just released last month, The Power of CEO Guiding Principles, that also is on Amazon. Great book, compilation of interviews with 62 of Orange County's top CEOs and what their response was to our question of what is your guiding principle in running your business. A little difficulty in getting that into Amazon on print, but it is there on the Kindle format, and the print version will follow very shortly. Our third book in the series will be out this summer. It is on coaching from the client's perspective, which again is our talk many times. And next week we'll be continuing with that conversation about coaching from the client's perspective. You know, we find so many great books out there for coaches talking about how to coach and how to coach better and how to grow your business as a coach. But I just haven't seen enough or maybe any books really talking about coaching from the client's perspective. So I'm really excited and very involved in putting the finishing touches on that book and hope to have that out to you very soon. So that, again, each week when we don't have an HR guest, we kind of sort of give you a preview of the chapters of the book. What is that? Let's see. It's not an e-format. It's not print. What do you know? It's verbal. We're right back to storytelling. Sit around the campfire and tell stories. It's the age-old way of imparting knowledge and wisdom. Well, look, I hope you've enjoyed our show today and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to make better, more informed business decisions. So, until the next show, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to The Coach's Perspective, only on OCTalkRadio.net.